Australia. This is the story of Bob, the world's greatest Hibs fan. It's not coming out. Right, well, I'll just shout then. All right, okay. I'll hold it. That's okay. This is Bob. He's 9 years old, and he lives in Edinburgh with his mum and dad and his big sister, Katie. Bob is the greatest Hibs fan in the world, and that's saying something because there are a lot of Hibs fans out there. But Bob is the best. He lives right next to a big park, which is perfect for a football fan, and he plays football with his friends every chance he can get. Sometimes, if he's been very good, his dad takes him to Easter Road to watch a match. But if he can't see a match live, Bob likes to watch his team play on telly with his dad and his collection of fellow fans, Ted, Quack the Duck, and Floppy the Rabbit. Bob always wears his Hibs scarf when he's watching, and he's very good at explaining the rules of the game to Ted, Quack, and Floppy, although he isn't sure that they really understand the offside rule. Bob's favourite matches are when Hibs play Hearts, but only if Hibs win. If Hibs ever lose against the Hearts, Bob is very sad, and so are Ted, Quack, and Floppy. One day, Bob was in the park playing football. His sister Katie, who was looking after him, had gone off to hit a tennis ball against the practice wall, and Bob was practicing his football skills on a large grassy area next to the road. He was trying to hone his goal-scoring skills by kicking the ball and trying to hit it against a tree. It wasn't going well. He kept missing, and the ball would fly past the tree and hit the fence which separated the park from the road. So Bob kept having to run and fetch the ball and then start again. He was very determined to hit the tree. Just as he was getting really fed up, thinking he was never going to hit the tree trunk, he tried one last kick. To his delight, the ball soared beautifully towards the tree and hit the trunk smack right in the centre. "He shoots, he scores," shouted Bob joyfully. He threw his arms in the air, closed his eyes and started running. He was just about to start his favourite victory celebration when something unfortunate happened. Bob tripped over a broken branch which was lying hidden in the grass. He landed heavily on his cheek and let out a yelp of pain. Groaning quietly, he rolled over onto his back and lay on the grass feeling very sore and dizzy. Just then a big shiny car stopped on the road next to the park and out stepped a very important looking man. Bob thought, maybe this person will see I'm hurt and come and help me. But he didn't. He walked right past Bob as he lay there on the ground. Then a very grand-looking lady appeared, walking her dogs. "I'm sure this lady will help me," thought Bob. But no, the lady swept past without a backward glance. Bob was still feeling dizzy, but he thought to himself, "I'm just going to have to get up and go and find my sister." Just then, who should appear but a boy who looked about the same age as Bob, but who was wearing something which made Bob feel even dizzier? A Hearts top. "Oh no," thought Bob, "the last thing I need is a Hearts fan making fun of me." And he tried to sit up and pretend that everything was okay, except that it wasn't. His cheek was really sore. He touched it and could feel a big lump. It took all Bob's willpower not to cry. He scrunched up his eyes to stop the tears from coming. "Are you okay?" asked a voice. Bob opened one eye. It was the Hearts fan who had spoken. Bob looked at him, waiting for him to start making fun of him. But he didn't look like he was going to start teasing him. In fact, the boy looked quite worried. "That looks really sore," he said. "It is," mumbled Bob. And to his surprise, the next thing that happened was that the boy came over and helped him to his feet. Bob thanked him a bit gruffly, and before he could say anything else, the boy said, "I've got two gobstoppers. Would you like one? My mum always gives me a sweetie if I hurt myself. She says it takes my mind off it." And so Bob and the boy each had a gobstopper. And he was right. It did take Bob's mind off the lump on his cheek. "Who are you here with?" asked the boy. Bob explained that his sister Katie was looking after him. The boy offered to go and find her. A couple of minutes later, the boy reappeared with Katie. She gave Bob a piggyback home while the boy carried Bob's football and Katie's tennis racket. "Thank you," shouted Bob as the boy headed back into the park. "No problem," shouted the boy. "Oh, and by the way, jam tarts." Bob laughed, and it only hurt his cheek a tiny little bit. And that's the end of the story. Now, I think Peter's maybe going to say some things to you before we do the next song. So, if you bear with me.
Does that story sound familiar? Where else have you... Yes. What does it sound like? It's like the story of the Good Samaritan. And that's what our theme is today. The Good Samaritan. What did the Good Samaritan do? What did the Good Samaritan do? He helped the Jewish man. That's exactly what he did. And what did that, the Jewish man had been hurt and been robbed, and he helped the Jewish man. And so we are called to help each other. It doesn't matter whether we're Hibs fans or Hearts fans. And that's a tough one because I like watching rugby, and the New Zealand team is not my favorite team in the world. But if there was a New Zealand fan in distress, I would have to go and help them because that's what Jesus has asked us to do. So, think about that. And we are going to sing together a song called "Will Your Anchor Hold?" And after we sung that song, you guys are going to go out for a little bit, and you're going to have an activity or two to keep you occupied. Okay, so let's sing together, "Will Your Anchor Hold?" So it may not surprise you that our Bible reading this morning is about the parable of the Good Samaritan, and it's found in Luke chapter 10, and I'm going to read from verse 25. I'm sure all of you know this story very well. Just then, a lawyer stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he said, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? What do you read there?" He answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You've given the right answer. Do this and you will live." But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him. And when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said, 'Take care of him, and when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." Amen. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, the well-known German writer, artist, and politician, once wrote these words: "Treat people as they want to be, and you help them become what they are capable of being. Treat people as they want to be, and you help them become what they are capable of being." This morning we've considered in a slightly different form the parable of the Good Samaritan. As I've said, it's a parable that most of us probably know quite well. And normally when we consider it, we focus on the fact that the man who was beaten up robbed and left for dead, was ignored by his countrymen as they passed him on the way. That they, being so-called holy men, should have helped him. But for various reasons, they didn't do that. They cooked up excuses in their own heads when they saw him, which they believed justified them leaving him where he was, lying in desperate need. A Samaritan, however, helped him. He bound up his wounds and got him to a place of safety and paid for his accommodation and said he would check on him when he came back. The Samaritan didn't see the differences between them. He didn't care about the man's race or his culture or his religion. He cared about the fact that another human being was in need. This morning I want us to briefly consider another part of what this story is about. And it's something that is vital to us as human beings. It is something that isn't often spoken about, but it's something that matters to each one of us on a daily basis, consciously and unconsciously. And that, friends, is the issue of dignity. Described by an expert in international conflict resolution as an internal state of peace that comes with the recognition and acceptance of the value and vulnerability of all living things. Or to put it another way, the innate right of every living thing to be valued and treated with care and compassion. Dignity is something that all of us are born with. We don't earn it. It isn't the same as respect, but it is a God-given gift, and it's part of our makeup as human beings. Our dignity is vitally important to our well-being, but it is a fragile and vulnerable thing. And when it is attacked, the consequences can be devastating. When it is upheld and nourished, however, it gives us a sense of well-being, of acceptance, and a peace that is priceless. The expert I've referred to, Dr. Donna Hicks, in her book about dignity, tells the story of a meeting with civilian and military leaders in a Latin American country. She was there to address the conflict that had revolved around leaders not being able to work together after decades of civil war. She was there to give a workshop on communication skills in the hope that it would mend the relationships that had been devastated over time. At the beginning of the meeting, the president of the country entered the room. He was simply there to introduce people, and then he intended to leave for another meeting. After observing the heated debates that were already raging, Dr. Hicks responded to the president by saying, "With all due respect, I have a feeling that a communications workshop is not what is needed here. The rifts in the relationships in this room are deep. My experience with parties in conflict is that when relationships break down to this extent, both sides feel their dignity has been violated. With your permission, I would like to shift the focus of the workshop to address these deeper issues of dignity." And at that point, the president told his scheduler to cancel all his meetings because he wanted to attend the workshop. And at the end of the workshop, which made space for people to speak about their dignity and how it had been broken down and had caused much damage and much hatred to be grown, a very resistant and unapproachable general who had refused to look her in the eye for 2 days approached her and said these words, "I want to thank you. Not only did you help to build the relationships in this room, I think you also saved my marriage." Dignity is not the same as respect, as I've mentioned. Dignity is a birthright. Respect is something that is earned over time. when inmates in prison for gang-related crimes have been asked why they did what they did, the usual answer is they've been disrespected. But the real cause of their anger, when one delves deeper, is that their dignity has been eroded, often by those around them, often by the societies that they've grown up in. And when one looks at the causes of things like revolutions and civil war and unrest in society, the main reason these things happen is because a people's dignity has been attacked and they have been humiliated. Just think of Jesus' time. The Jews for centuries had lived under the iron fists of various occupying forces, and their dignity as a people had been shattered. That is why there were a number of revolts that mostly ended in devastation for them. That is why Jesus said, "Do not call a person a fool," because doing so meant attacking someone's dignity and humiliating them, making them feel inferior, making them feel that they were less than human. In my own country, during the years of apartheid, the black people time and time again had their dignity attacked. They were belittled and humiliated and made to feel that they were less than human, and it caused immense damage. There's an old saying that I'm sure all of you know. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me or hurt me. Remember that as children? Maybe you still use it today, I don't know, but as children we used to say that. That saying isn't true. In fact, neuroscientists have found that a psychological injury such as being excluded or humiliated stimulates the same part of the brain as a physical wound. No bones are broken, no blood appears, because the harm isn't felt on the outside. It takes place within. Our self-worth, our value, our need to be a part of a body is shot to pieces. And either causes within us the urge known as fight or flight. As I've reflected upon dignity, I've realized that as a child, I must have had a strong sense of my own dignity, although I wouldn't have known what it was called. But I thought I was just terribly shy, but I've realized that often I would avoid certain activities with other children because I didn't want to be made a fool of or humiliated or even bullied. And it's something that's remained with me. And it's something that I hate to see happening to other people. Friends, Jesus was a master at nurturing the dignity in other people. When he met people who were in need, he never acted as if he had all the solutions to their problems. Even asking a blind man what he wanted him to do as if it wasn't obvious enough. He never shamed or belittled them, no matter what they had done. Instead, he built them up by accepting them, honoring them as human beings, and treating them with compassion. There are a number of dimensions to the parable of the Good Samaritan, as I've briefly mentioned, and dignity is one of them. Whereas the thugs who had beaten the man senseless had stripped the victim of their crime of his dignity, the Good Samaritan treated him as he would have liked to have been treated had he been in the same situation. And he sought to restore the man's dignity by binding his wounds and caring for him, letting him know that he was worth the effort. That's a parable, a story which conveys meaning without necessarily being true or factual. So one can only imagine. But you can bet the man who had been beaten would never have forgotten the one who cared for him, who saved his life, who gave him hope, the one who had given him back his dignity. A story that is true, however, and factual, took place in my place of birth. A And it probably stands as one of the greatest examples of dignity in world history outside the example of Jesus. After being in prison for 27 years, Nelson Mandela said, "I knew that people expected me to harbor anger towards whites, but I had none. In prison, my anger towards whites decreased, but my hatred for the system grew. I wanted South Africa to see that I loved even my enemies while I hated the system that turned us against one another." He also wrote these words, "No one is born hating another person because of the color of their skin, or his background, or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite." Even in the grimmest times in prison, when my comrades and I were pushed to our limits, I would see a glimmer of humanity in one of the guards, perhaps just for a second, but it was enough to reassure me and keep me going. Man's goodness is a flame that can be hidden but never extinguished. About his own sense of worth, his own sense of dignity, which enabled him to do what he did for South Africa, he wrote, "Prison and the authorities conspire to rob each man of his dignity. In and of itself, that ensured that I would survive, for any man or institution that tries to rob me of my dignity will lose, because I will not part with it at any price or under any pressure." Dr. Hicks writes, "Because Mandela's sense of his own value and worth was so deeply ingrained, he never lost sight of the inherent value and worth of others, no matter how badly he was mistreated. His sense of dignity, the very source of his humility." This is important stuff. To understand your inherent value and worth, your dignity for simply being, and to respect it and nourish it in others, no matter who or what they are. It is our calling as Christians not to diminish, humiliate, or point out the faults in others, be they children or adults, but to treat each one with dignity in our homes, in our church, in our places of work, just as Jesus did with those whom he met. I'd like to end with a quote from the book Dignity. "Approach people as being neither inferior or superior to you. Give others the freedom to express their authentic selves without fear of being negatively judged. Interact without prejudice or bias, accepting the ways in which race, religion, ethnicity, gender, class, sexual orientation, age, and disability may be at the core of other people's identities. Assume that others have integrity. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" Jesus asked. "The one who showed him mercy." Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." Amen.